Good morning. It's 6:17 a.m., November 18th, 2012, Pacific Northwest, North America, for reference period and time and date. Today's Wujo is going to run down some quick topics here, some things of general interest, and then some specific notes. Specific note right off, Kathy's doing better. We're still in recovery mode, so we have bad days and good days. And I've discovered I don't have to be in the hospital in order to read books. And as an aside to that, just something else I noted was when in the hospital, you'll find that, at least in Olympia, very few people are reading. And there's not very many magazines displayed and everything. There's just TVs everywhere. It's little odd. My generation is probably an overlap generation, I guess. Maybe that and my father as well. But remember when hospitals used to just be virtual libraries? There was so much reading material around. Anyway, there's been a whole lot of questions about the Gaza action and the Israeli mistake. The Israeli mistake was a very specific, focused set. It still grows, and in one sense it's sharpened, and in another sense it's widened out and morphed. The widening out and morphing is that it's lost its large edge around the attack on Iran, as though in the end that's either prevented or circumstances interrupt it, which I actually think that's the issue, which I can get to in a bit. You have to excuse me, it's a bit stormy, and I have I'm also in recovery mode, which means I'm not getting a lot of sleep these days. But in any event, the Gaza activity on the part of Israel, their version of the Hegelian dialectic, or as David Icke says, problem response solution, or problem solution response. I can't think this early in the morning. I'm having my first cup of tea, by the way. In any event, though, so that is indeed the temporal marker we've been waiting for. That was one of the I shouldn't discuss it things that that was in the interview with that I had a while back here with Mel at Veritas Radio. And I just couldn't discuss it then because there's some things I just don't want to bring up, not out of fear of it being a self-fulfilling prophecy, but because the nature of time and events and people out there doing future forecasting has muddied things a great deal. I'll get into the details of that some other time in another discussion, because it's an hour-long thought on its own. But anyway, so there's the rabbinical mistake now at the sharpening. The sharpening of the Israeli mistake is focused in on a rabbinical organization of some form. I don't have a word for it. I don't think it's really a council, although that word shows up repeatedly. It is not the definitive descriptor for what's going on. Apparently there's a group, let's just call it that, a rabbinical group within the Zionist movement that also extends outside the Zionist movement. Some of the members of the rabbinical group know that the whole religion thing is bullshit and that it's a control mechanism, and they don't care. They're playing their role on that side. And then they also interact with the real controllers on the other side, where the pretense doesn't exist. We get that out of our data. This rabbinical mistake is coming up. It doesn't matter if I talk about it now or not, because I think it's already in the momentum stage. It's going to end up being a real clusterfuck. I mean, these guys are going to just get screwed royally because of their own actions. And it's going to cause or participate or precipitate a whole slew of events around it that are interconnected. Now, I'm not going to say that it's going to cause a lot of them. They're just there at the same time. So some of these events are all lumped together within our data in a very short period of time. Some of the events, for instance, include a general sense on the part of nations and their power structures around the planet that the United States is politically unstable. This will arise as a result of the rabbinical mistake. Actually, not directly, but is indirectly going to cause it or precipitate its visibility. That and some other events, might as well get into those, will cause the rapid rise in silver and gold prices. Now, here's something. When the data is quite clear about this, when there's a rapid rise in silver, the very first one is going to be a flush or a fake out, I think. I don't know really how to describe it. The data suggests that there's going to be a political will behind it, trying to get people to dishoard their old silver items. So when you see adverts saying, turn in your old sterling and get some cash for Christmas, or, you know, might be as far as Valentine's Day, but I think around in this period of time, we'll see it happen fairly briefly. Dishoarding effort is actually going to be engineered. So watch out for that one, because our data suggests that we might see something like, say, a $10 to $12 jump in silver, a 20 or 30% jump in silver relatively shortly, and an attempt to get dishoarding to occur, and then actually press, you know, visibility on the side of this dishoarding, and then press visibility on the other side of it. And what they'll do is they'll try and drive the price of silver down as a result of the dishoarding in the claim, or... It's very muddy in here. There will be some attempt to use this dishoarding, natural impulse or not, to attempt to manipulate the price of silver after the wave of the dishoarding has occurred. There will be a level of visibility around it in terms of, you'll probably see TV news items that, you know, show the lines of people trying to turn in their silver for money, that kind of a thing. So just a heads up, that's a temporary up and a temporary down. The temporary down shows to be very brief because of the events that occur shortly around that period of time. In that same period of time, we're going to see the real eruption here of the pedophilia, global pedophilia network control system. Is going to become very visible in numbers of countries, to the point where let's just call it vigilante activity will start occurring, and then the vigilante activity, as much as it'll be suppressed, will itself start getting press, and that's when you're going to see some of the very higher ups of the, or you won't see them actually, you'll notice them by their absence. So, for instance, nobody's saying shit about the Pope these days, not only because he's a sick old bastard, but because Ratzinger is in hiding as they attempt to deal with the repercussions of what they know is headed their way. Not only is this visible within our data, but I've gotten to a point where, you know, people call and tell me things just out of the blue. And some of the stuff I know to be legit, and some of it is very interesting. Most of it I don't repeat ever, probably, which is why people tell me. But it does confirm the data that suggests that the next big wave of the pedophilia exposure will be linked temporally to the rabbinical mistake eruption, as well as the breakout, if you will, into public of the exposure of the interlinked global network of higher-ups really into this nasty, nasty pedophilia and necrophilia, and I guess we're going to have to say energy crimes against humans, because that, at its core, that's what's going on. You know, David Icke is not a nutter. Okay, excuse me. David Icke may be absolutely fucking crazy. I have no way of validating his mental state, and it's immaterial to me because he's accurate. So, as I've said before, just because I'm crazy did not necessarily make me wrong, and that I apply to him as well. His statements about the reptilian and the energy theft, if you will, are very accurate to people who can see aura and see what's going on at that level. You get hints of this, and you know that this is indeed the case. So, there's that level of exposure is not going to come out because most of the public wouldn't be able to handle it, and it would just so distort the issue that it just wouldn't be pursued at all. However, the horror of the actual physical crimes against individuals will come out. The interconnectedness of it at a global level will come on out. A lot of people are going to be left wondering, huh, this is going to affect the political stability of a great number of regions of the planet. Ours, from, you can just basically from England, Scotland, draw a big line through the English-speaking countries all the way back into Australia, and you're going to be looking at a major political breakup and impact as a result of this, because it's all coming out. Now, they can't help it coming out. It's going to get worse. The rabbinical mistake is going to further that inadvertently. It's a side effect that's going to expose the ties between the father, the Pope of the Catholics, the pretend father, and the vast number of crimes that Ratzinger personally is responsible for, as well as all the cover-ups. And that's going to just seriously shake up the what's left of the Catholic Church. It's in its death knells. It's in its last generation now. You can tell this just based on the service class of minions that are, and their average age. You know, nuns in the U.S., I don't know for sure, go out and look it up, but their average age is like 67 or something. So this is, and they're not being replenished. The average age keeps creeping up as the younger ones are dying off. It's the old ones that are really tough and hanging on, probably because they're just mean as hell. Anyway, let's go on to the next part of this. At the same period of all of this, we're going to see the visibility, the rise in visibility of the secession movement at an official level. You'll know that this is true because there will be precursor moves, and some of these will include the formation of state banks. I suspect it'll be California that'll be the first one, but it may well be Washington State that forms the first state bank as part of this movement. There are other state banks in existence now, and they're doing very well, because they're not part of the Fed system. But this next move will begin a wave that is coincident with the states themselves starting to think of themselves as republics. So here's a mental shift that's occurring. Actually, this is really a, especially in America, especially in North America, there is a temporal echo between now and 1844. I think it was in 1844 that we first had the transcontinental telegraph come into existence, and everybody at the time proclaimed it with basically the same language that we used when the internet came into existence. Breakthrough in consciousness, new evolution for the species, and all of this, blah, 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 blah. Same language all over again. This temporal echo with 1844 has got all kinds of interesting hooks in it. And one of the things that we see is a return now. Now that the flush, if you will, from 1844 until now has been just a big rush for all of us as we've, if you will, experimented with the emotional state of hypernationalism. And by hypernationalism, I mean large continental-sized, empire-sized nation states. This wave is going away, and we'll see it. As part of that, we'll see the breakup occur with the formation of the state banks. When you see those occur, you'll also be seeing the silver and gold rises happen, the breakup of the U.S. dollar into a two-tier currency, one in that the Federal Reserve is going to attempt to impose by force within the continental and extracontinental boundaries of the Empire of the United States, and then the other, which is going to be the remnants of it globally as it dies off. I mean, people will be digging up dollars out of their mattresses probably 30 years from now and trying to do something with them. But there's going to be a general trend away from it outside of our borders, outside of the national, former national borders of the former the United States and the United States, which was a corporation created in 1877. As opposed to these United States, which is a confederation of independent states who have the right to do whatever the fuck they want and agree to it in their own local consensus, as long as they do it nonviolently. Which brings us up to a little bit of a preview. I don't normally do this. I want to do a little bit of a teaser. I intend to put out a Wujo sometime around the Thanksgiving period, probably a few days afterwards. I'm waiting for the maturity of certain events before getting into it, but it's a really delicious little story. I think you'll enjoy it. It's going to provide us all with some nice ways of thinking about things in the future, and presently, but also how the future could evolve. And it also has some, as I say, some interesting story characteristics to it. But I can't get into it at the moment, but it's so cool that I'm setting up... I'm going to do a Wujo about it, but then I'm also going to go and talk to Jeff Rentz about the idea and going to set up another interview with another radio host of a different kind of personality so we get a good coverage on it. You know, it's nice to get the various different perspectives. Rentz is a really solid guy, and is not known for being flighty at all. He's got his own little perspective on the planet that keeps him grounded. And he's got all that hair. So, that, I mean, that helps too. But anyway, I like Jeff, and we haven't spoken in a long, 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 long time. And this is a really good subject that his audience will appreciate. And so I'll set up another interview as well. I'll put these on my site ahead of time when I know that everything is cool and we've got the time booked with Rents. He's agreed ahead of time. We just don't have a date because I'm waiting on these events to occur. Can't do it ahead of time of that because of a lot of reasons, which you'll see when we get there. Anyway, so... excuse me. California and the banks, or Washington and the banks, or Oregon and the banks, or probably not Utah, I bet, but it might be Nevada. Nevada. Anyway, they the states will begin the breakup here in the West, and it's going to be coincident with other signs of political instability at a national level that brings about a repudiation or basically a destruction of the faith component or the fear component of the U.S. dollar. You either like it because you have faith in it if you're outside the United States borders, or you accept it because you're scared of our bombs and our bullets and stuff. That'll all be happening real quick and all together. Bear in mind what I'm saying, that there's going to be the bust up of the state. It's not going to happen overnight. It's not going to it'll be a long, slow process. But the instigator, the precursor instigator here, you'll know the visibility when they just announce, oh, hey, California's formed its own state bank for thus and so reason, none of which relate to leaving the U.S. as a political entity. These United States, TUS. But that is the end result. So, now, also coinciding with this, you may have noticed that we've got bizarre weather on the East Coast. I'm in the midst of not a hurricane, but and basically it's a normal Pacific Northwest storm. It's just slightly extreme is all. Not even greatly extreme. Most of the extreme weather is now concentrating in the Atlantic. I'll get to why I think that's occurring in just a second, but the let's describe what will be occurring there. The Atlantic Basin will have a striation effect as a result of the shift in climate and weather patterns, which is occurring as a result of the expansion of the planet. So this all relates to earthquakes, Patrick Garrel, and so on. So it's worth hanging around for a second. It's our thinking here that what's going to happen is that an area from, say, slightly south of the British Isles by, say, maybe 5 to 6 degrees, from there north, all across in a band from the Newfoundland coast all the way over into the North Sea will be exceptionally cold. There's going to just be a winter of hell there. I don't know how long it's going to last, but the intensity values are very high within the visibility factors. So there will be a lot of discussion about how intense the cold component of this particular storm system or winter is. There's no real indication that it's going to last forever or that it's exceptionally long. That kind of stuff would be difficult to pick up within the immediacy data in any event. However, if there were some, it would show up at this stage, and we just don't see it. Now, from that period, from about, say, 6 degrees latitude south of the British Isles south to about the Bay of Biscay in Europe, or, say, over to northern Florida, in that band along the Atlantic, both sides of the Atlantic coast, we're going to see more than usual storms of all kinds, not only low pressure hurricane like storms, tropical depressions basically, but also these weird they are weird to our experience, but also evolving storms in which we get these hyper low pressures that seem to suck in intense cold as a follow up, so that they get a nor'easter following Sandy. And the nor'easter brings in a cold component. That appears to be a pattern that's going to be developing, It also is going to show up on the French side of the coast. From northern Florida southward, we're showing a flattening or a dissipation of the heat patterns over this particular winter, such that the winter is not showing as exceptionally cold, although there may indeed be a creep-down effect from what's going on up north. But the general trend line will be sort of a stagnant air and things, that when it clears, that's also not going to be good, because it'll be clearing by very violent storms that'll apparently hit the Gulf and go north from there. I would expect at some point within our winter, and I don't know when that's going to be officially over, because of the shift in the nature of the planet, which I can get into in a second. But so the data is showing a winter storm period that will also go through the Gulf and up into the central North American area with some ferocity. Now, our issue here is that we're bounded usually by things like the equinoxes, and we can say, oh, winter starts here and it ends there, solstice to equinox. Well, in this case, we're having to look at winter in a different form, because our data is indicating that it will become apparent to the humans now, and that's basically what all of our data works off of, is not actual facts, but how humans will be talking about it. So it's a forecast of the language, not the event, but rather the language that will be used to discuss the event. And our data is forecasting that the humans will be discussing about how strange the weather patterns are, how lopsided, irregular, out of sync, and the irregularity component and out of sync also go to the extra seasonal idea. So there is some suggestion that winter will not be bounded by our traditional solstice to equinox boundaries. Does that mean it'll start early? Indeed. Does it mean it'll continue longer? And in some places, I'm quite sure that that's the case. But also, because of the irregularity of it all, we're going to get areas that are just going to be basically bypassed by this. You know, a happy juxtaposition for the people that happen to be living there, and perhaps real hell on either side. Lots of indications of further disruptions in power as we go forward, and it's this breakdown, this spottiness that we're seeing all over, that I think may be part of our component to the our longer-term forecast from way back when of the Internet, or our source of data at that point, basically going dark for us by May of next year, going silent. So we see areas, for instance, that have yet to recover any kind of communications ability in regions of the, that have been hit by Sandy. I suspect that as we go forward, there'll be further damage, more and more of these spots that'll show up, and it may be a contributing component to what occurs over these next few months. I'm not really going to speculate on that too much. There's been so much change in the nature of the immediacy language itself that there's some thought in my head here that we may be looking at an even larger change relative to how the language is used. But that aside, you may have noticed that we've had a lot of earthquakes recently, getting to the point where we're having 6.0s every other day for sure. I think, you know, we're in a spate at the moment of one every day. In any event, this is all part of what's going on relative to the end of the Mayan calendar, the long count, rather, because it's not the calendar itself, it's just the count. And relative to Patrick Garrell's forecasts. Patrick Garrell has got a good methodology for forecasting these quakes. I still contend that he is not accurate in the sense of a crustal shift. I used to think a crustal shift was possible. I've read through Hapgood, read through all of the supporting material for years, everything I could get my hands on relative to the effect, and I'm convinced that all of that evidence points to expansion, not a shift. So there's two ways to interpret the evidence, or more than two ways to interpret the evidence, but two broad theories on interpreting the evidence. One is that the crust of the Earth rotates like an orange, and the other is that the Earth has grown over time. I'm supposedly up here in the Northwest, I live near this giant subduction zone called the San Juan Plate, area where the San Juan Plate is theoretically ramming itself under the Pacific Plate. And I'm here to tell you, people, there is no such thing as a subduction zone. I've lived in a lot of places that theoretically had them. I used to be an underwater kind of guy, and I've never seen anything that relates at all, looks like what they describe subduction zones. And the mechanics of a subduction zone could not be hidden by such topical features as, you know, sediment deposits and this kind of a deal. So I doubt the existence of it. And I have the expando planet theory that offers another way of interpreting the evidence. Still catastrophic, and that leads us up to where we're at the moment. It may be, for some time now, we've had our global coastal event data that suggests there's going to be a great deal of coastal interaction with the seas in a non-nice fashion for humans, and we'd better be prepared for this. And if you live on a low-lying area, you may really need to think about how to get out of there quickly for a lot of reasons. The data suggested that the global coastal event, because of the way the data has grown, was more or less coincident with the 2013 period, 2012 through onward, and we weren't really able to peg when, don't have a date per se. But we now have a theory for a methodology, or for a method of what's going to cause the effect globally. And we're sort of already seeing it, I believe. And that is with these hyper-low pressure systems on the Atlantic coast, we're getting a antipodal reaction in the Pacific. And I've always maintained here that the global coastal event will originate in the Pacific. Now, it could be that it's meteors. We've got a big-ass comet coming in, and who knows what's behind it. There's all kinds of junk floating around in our near space, our conical section within the trailing cone behind the sun that we inhabit in a spiral fashion is moving through a different area of space, so we're going to even be picking up space dust and junk and water maybe, who knows. But what we do know is that there's real evidence that the crust of the planet is shifting, that it is expanding. And in fact, we've had the Banda Aceh quake in 2000, and the Boxing Day quake, Sumatra, that actually split the Indo-Australian plate, cracked it some 1,200 kilometers, shifted vast quantities of land up and down, and caused the tsunami that killed all those people and wrecked all those countries. This will be repeated around the Pacific Rim. I now am pretty convinced that the crack that will occur in the northern Pacific, not the southern. This is good for everybody who's away the hell away. It will relate to the forecast of the Farsight.org guys. If you really want to read about some of the effects and you haven't encountered their work, go to Farsight.org, click on the 2012 tab at the top, and go to that link and read all of their remote viewing studies. The remote viewing is accurate. It's playing out as forecast in my validation studies. This is scary crap. And so I'm of the opinion that the Pacific Plate rupture or crack will be a participating component in this. It is not, in a true sense, the cause, because the cause is the expansion of our planet. Our planet is getting bigger. As the planets shift in the cone, the harmonics of space that bind them, the constraints in which we orbit, and I put orbit in quotes, behind the sun here, in our spiral fashion, that section of the cone is what allows us to grow, very much like an insect has to shed its shell or get a larger shell in order to grow its body. It's constrained by the exterior forces of the universe, so to speak, pushing in on it. Our skeletons are internal, and we wrap them up so we can grow slowly around the outside, but our skeletons basically stay the same size. Earth is the kind of creature where its growth is, and all planets are constrained by the conical section that they spiral within behind the sun that they follow. So as we slip back further away from the sun, we're in a larger conical section. This will allow us to have a larger planetary size. There are certain harmonics that work relative to the number of planets and so on. I'm suspecting I'm pretty sure it'll also alter our, quote, orbit and make our year appear to be about somewhere less than 16 days, but longer. So we might get 10 days longer to, you know, about to 14. The math is a little obscure, and reducing it to arithmetic at this point is kind of meaningless anyway. But we will, in my opinion, gain over a week. I mean, a noticeable number of days in our year, as well as have the planet grow, which is going to affect things like gravity, and of course all the distances, GPS, all of that sort of crud. Now, when the Pacific Plate crack occurs, it's not going to be good for places like island nation states that are directly south of the wave, because they'll get the brunt of the tsunami that will originate from the North Pacific Plate crack. It may be that the signs we're seeing here for a North Pacific Plate crack will be simultaneous with a crack in the south, and it may be that crack in the south is what causes problems for Australia all the way over to the eastern coast of Africa. The good news, in a sense, at least initially, is that the Atlantic Basin is not initially impacted. It will be later, both by the water flow from the Pacific, the alteration of the relationship between the Americas, which will probably cause several new natural canals to exist in the region of the Panama Canal as the continents crack through there. But also the Atlantic Basin will respond, but it might be that the Atlantic Basin crack or expansion at the mid-Atlantic ridge point won't occur until 3 or 4 years later, because the planet moves at a speed that is much slower than humans would anticipate in some regards. So once the crack occurs, certain pressures will be released. We'll see earthquakes subside after the initial aftershocks settle down, and things will sort of return to normal, and then the planet will rebound or respond. So its crack occurs maybe in 2013, then maybe by 2014, 15, 16, in that period, everything seems to quiet down a bit, and then there will be a response on as the Atlantic Ocean, Atlantic Basin separates and new material comes out there, all of north and south, all along from pole to pole, except in the region of the equatorial bulge. So from about 30 degrees latitude to 90 degrees latitude, both north and south, we'll see the largest level of growth in the mid-Atlantic. And then we'll have another period of quiescence, and maybe it'll all settle down as forecast by around 2021. And then we'll be into our new normal that will be sort of stable, much more stable than it has been in the recent years, and will much more stable than it will be over these next 7 years. But far less stable than it was, say, in the late 20s, 30s, and 40s of the last century, when earthquakes and so on were infrequent, although deadly. So that's where we're at with the planetary expansion report, or at least our take on it relative to what the data suggests and what our analysis suggests and ongoing events. And you'll notice along coincident with this, all kinds of earthquake activity, coincident with the Pacific Plate rupture, probably all kinds of volcanic activity, throwing all kinds of crud up into the air, and we'll be breathing all this crud for a while. So you may want to take some of this into account in terms of your preparations for these next few years, you know, gas masks or the ability to make one, primarily for silica dust in your cars and this kind of thing. Okay, so that's... All right, so that's where we are. So sometime after Thanksgiving, I'll have this Wujo that's more pertinent to people in the United States temporarily, although it is globally pertinent. It has a specific focus for people in the U.S. or the Anglo world here. It'll be very interesting, I think. At least I find it just fascinating, and the potential is really cool. Now, a couple of things here. We are in the process, Kathy and I, of relocating. We're just going to go ahead and do this, and the universe is probably going to catch us out and send a meteor, you know, to smash into my truck as I'm hauling crap to the new house here, but that doesn't matter. We're just going to go ahead and do it all. And in the process, I'm moving towards creating a new focus for our, let's call it business life, for lack of a better understanding of things. And this is going to be that I want to create a PU, a permaculture university. Permaculture is really cool. It's sort of a way of thinking about things. If the world bumbles through, I've got a proposition that the Western states or resource harvesting guys are just going to love. And I'm going to maybe try and do business with government with this new idea, a la Buckminster Fuller and some of his inventions. Now, our little PU in the PNW, our Permaculture University in the Pacific Northwest effort, has led me to do a ton of research into property and all of this kind of thing, because I need some more land in order to do this. I actually will get to the point here at some stage where we'll be hosting gatherings on the property, educational seminars, if you will. And so I need to be able to accommodate this. There's all kinds of backstory to this, which I can get into at some point. Not sure how long we've been going. Oh, too long anyway. But anyway, so here's some interesting information for people that may be in a situation where they want to track down land in order to homestead or this kind of a deal. I've discovered this interesting and very sad situation. And it has to do with what we used to call out here gypo loggers, okay? And that was spelled G-Y-P-O. And a gypo logger, when I up here in the Northwest, resource harvesting, chopping down trees, or harvesting fish and everything, has led to a certain class of individuals showing up. And these are guys that play a little bit fast and loose with the rules that are placed around those resource harvesting. So we've had these guys that were called gypo loggers. And a gypo logger is a guy who would come on in, for instance, and he'd put down, these days, I'll cite you an example out of Oregon that I encountered. Gypo logger puts down $4,000 cash to a bond company in Oregon and secures a $40,000 bond. And he this 10-to-1 ratio. He then takes that $40,000 bond and goes to the state of Oregon at this time, some years back, and used the $40,000 bond on a 10-to-1 ratio on a $400,000 timber harvest arrangement. And he wins the bid or whatever the process was and ends up in this particular county. And I'm not sure which county it was in Oregon. It was along the coast. I think it was on the Pacific side there of the of Mount Ashland. But I've read so many that I just can't remember where it was, although the details of this particular one are stuck in my mind. And I actually talked to the county fellow about it, which I'll discuss in a second. Anyway, so Gypo Logger goes and he takes his $400,000 tract of timber out in the wilds of the forests of Oregon, and he whacks it all down. And he whacks it all down in a particularly brutal fashion because he's reasonably isolated, and he basically rapes the land. Oregon is not pleased about this when they discover it. The guy didn't put in any of the roads. He didn't do any of the erosion control. There was none of the required remediation to the property. And see, this is where I'm going to come in with my permaculture university later on. But because I've got a method that works for this, as well as a bunch of other cool ideas. In any event, so onto the story of the gypo logger in the county. Let's just say that it was, Lincoln County in Oregon. Okay, so the Lincoln County discovers the gypo logger has taken $400,000 worth of trees, and he's bolted. And in fact, he was so slick because he did it all so well and so quickly, obviously practiced, he went back and he claimed his $4,000 bond because there had been no complaints on it by the time within the specified contract. And so he got $400,000 worth of timber harvested, paid no tax on it, put no money into roads that he did not have to. And so we're talking the most crude kind of hacking at the wilderness there to just get your equipment in to steal more trees. And he just was a terrible, terrible fellow relative to stewardship of the planet. Now, here's where we are now. This occurred a number of years back. Excuse me, this particular instance. And so this particular county, Lincoln County, on the side of the coast there, but it doesn't matter what county anywhere, it's all happening all up and down in the timber harvest areas. Zippo Logger here has left the county holding the bag. The property basically is now a, from their viewpoint, from the county's viewpoint, it is worth less. It is worth less down to the point where it is worth only what you can get for it from taxes. There were no taxes paid on the timber. The timber will take 40 or 50 years to grow back after it's replanted. No one's making the replanting effort because they don't have the money. The roads are terrible and they need to be redone. No one's doing the rehab on the roads to stop erosion because the county doesn't have the money and there's no one taking responsibility for any of this. And so the county's left with a state of, quote, ownership of the property because the original property owners don't want it anymore because the lease that they'd given to the Zippo Logger so degraded the property that they bolted on their commitments to the property itself. And so the county finds itself stuck with all of these issues, all of these property-related issues. Now, this is how I got into it, was I was doing property searches at a very intense level. Hang on just a second. Okay, so here's the good news for everybody. Well, the good news is, for everybody else, is that I'm old, and so I'm not going to be able to do this myself because I just don't have the lifespan left in me to take on a task of this. But say that you were younger than I am by a number of years and you had the energy and you wanted to get some really good quality land at a very low nominal Federal Reserve note U.S. dollar price. Well, I'm here to tell you that there are probably several thousands, maybe tens of thousands of tracts of this land that have been handled in this bad fashion by Zippo loggers in counties all up and down the west coast of the U.S. In any place where they've gone, where you have timber harvesting as a as a resource, there are these instances over these past few years. They really started in about 2003, 2004, as we started ramping up into the boom. Because what happened is the counties were reactive. They never have had enough people to effectively patrol and monitor this kind of activity. And with the boom going on, they were doing a lot more harvesting, selling a lot more timber, transferring a lot more land with fewer and fewer and fewer people. Now they're in the other side of it. They've even had to lay off what few people they've had to do this kind of activity. And so they, since 2007, at the peak of the property boom here in the West, 2007 and 2008, and the values have crashed, and now they find that there's a situation, of course, there's not much timber harvesting going on. There isn't a huge demand for building. Wood-based building material is down, so there isn't that much activity going on, and so that's been the justification to lay off the existing county people that used to do this kind of work, lay them off at least to some degree. So we find ourselves in a situation here where Lincoln County in Oregon may have 30 properties, it may have 300. It's hard to say. Many of the counties do know, it's hard for me to say, but many of the counties do know and have explicitly set up subdivisions of their county government to deal with it. And these subdivisions of county government sometimes have websites. Some of the websites I've found will list parcel numbers. Now, here's where it gets tricky, guys. You could find 40 acres of land, hilly, not agricultural land. Bear in mind, these will all be areas where timber has been harvested. In the main, I think 99.99% this is going to be true. I have yet to run across anything personally that was not a timber harvest when in doing my research this way. So you'll get a parcel number. It'll be, say a 9 to a 20-digit number. That parcel number can lead you through the county government maps to plats. Those plat maps and plot maps will show you where that property is. Some of the property is isolated. Got no roads. You got to figure out how to get there if you're going to buy the property. But here's the deal. This particular Zippo logger with his $400,000 land rape of the trees there left a number of these parcels, one of which I'll cite you here because it stuck in my mind, was 40 acres of hilly country in the Oregon coast, beautiful view from what I'm told by the local county guy, all the way out to the Pacific, and they want $5,300 for it. The county will actually, because of the ownership issues, the county now owns those 40 acres. And they'll sell you those 40 acres for $5,300 U.S. dollars. and you can go there. Now, you got real problems in doing so. You could hike in, you wouldn't have any problem, but you're going to have to take in any building materials. There's, as I say, it's been really trashed in the way of the property, so anybody getting into it is going to put in years of effort or lots and lots of money in order to make it habitable and to make the land back into something. Also, there's going to be requirements placed on anybody that gets these parcels, such as replanting and so on. Now, when that occurs, if someone were to do that, they should contact me because I've got a method that will satisfy the county's requirements. It's not as onerous as the current method of hand replanting of trees, and it has all kinds of other benefits for wildlife and the land in general, and the county will love it. So if you were to buy that and rehab, get hold of me and I'll detail this, and you can present it to the county, and they'll probably buy into it and save you some trouble and some costs. But still, you'll have a lot of effort. You'll have to get tractors and do some real work on this kind of thing. But some of these areas out here are gorgeous. If you're of a mind to be a homesteader, you could make quite a life for yourself. It's going to be grueling labor, but it is perhaps a unique opportunity, certainly in this century, to obtain these kinds of properties at these kind of prices. It may be that this will continue and get even, in terms of the number of properties showing up on the county rolls, will grow. That's been what I've been told from a number of the county officers that are in charge of these. You'll find, for instance, when you go to these counties, what you're going to be looking for is the forestry tax department. So you're going to be looking for words around forestry land tax, resource land use tax, and so on in any of the counties. Some of the counties are flat out trying to do this. They're trying to tell you to come and buy this land. And they may have, a couple of counties have got websites where you can actually submit a bid to buy the property online. And here's the way in which this works. A lot of these properties were foreclosed on by the county for non-payment of taxes, and the titular owners at the time, banks, individuals, or whatever, didn't want to screw with the remediation costs for standing up after the Rajipo loggers have gotten them. So the county, 5 years ago, auctioned the property off, and no one bought it. And basically, the county at that stage, because of the nature of the laws under which we operate, had to end up being the buyer of last resort, and they bought it from themselves. So they are not offering these properties for sale. These properties are owned by the county for back taxes. Sometimes you'll see that the tax amount might be $500 a year on, say, 20 acres. I'm just making a number up, over the past 5 years. And so you multiply, and that's how much money you would have to offer them, theoretically, for them to sell you the property if they were selling the property. But instead, here's what the actual mechanism is. Many of these places have a mechanism, a form online, that will allow you to petition the county to resell the property. This is the legal mechanism that they have to use to actually bring it up, because you're dealing with county-owned property as though, you know, surplus trucks and this kind of thing. And so they got to be fair to all humans that are in there, in the county or elsewhere. So they will have a public auction with this property that you have found. Now, likely, nobody else is going to bid on it. And so probably you'll get the bid now, or get the property. Now, when I say 40 acres for $5,300, that was an actual case where Jippo Logger had screwed the county, and the county had, I think, $25,000 in taxes, as I recall, owing on the property, but no one bid other than the guy who petitioned for the resale, and at that point, that was all he bid, and they accepted it, because they are so desperate to get these properties back on the tax rolls. Now, when they accepted it, he had to sign a statement that basically committed him to putting about $12,000 into road work instantly in order to satisfy a condition of sale. I don't know how it's gone. I haven't pursued it. This was a fairly recent sale. I suppose I could track it down. But this gives you an idea of the kinds of things that are possible there. So, you have to do the work. The county is, this is not going to be easy. If you decide you want to do it, you're going to have to locate the areas you want to live in, find the county's websites, track down the parcel numbers that are owned by the county for back taxes, find those that are suitable to you with this rather tedious process, because very few counties have a map to parcel number direct approach here, and many of the counties are not even as organized as to have the parcel numbers more than a simple list. And so it'll be a real problem for you. However, there are some real gems here. Hundreds of acres that can be had for relatively few dollars if you're willing to put the energy into rehabbing the planet, which is basically what it's going to amount to. Now, when you do the petition for a resale, you'll fill out the form and get it back to them. They will have a period of notice that has to go on out. Sometimes these counties will say, well, we've got a 6 months notice period that we've got to have on this. This is not true, as I've discovered. And you can, again, petition them to basically do the thing in a hurry. And they will accommodate that because they're very desperate to get these properties back on the tax roll. And they will monitor you and make you pay your taxes because they need the bucks, guys. But this is really a... it's not a good thing. I mean, these gypo loggers shouldn't be allowed to operate rough on the land this way and steal the old growth and all of this. But there are real potential silver linings here for certain individuals that could get on out and make themselves a life in these areas. Because it's possible for a number of, you know, it used to be that I think they said that it was one person per 40 acres. But with modern techniques and so on, you can get several people surviving off of a single acre. This is the kind of deal that we're going to go into in our PU in the PNW. So anyway, give it a shot. If you do get to the point where you've actually got money down on one of these properties, give me a call. I'm yet to put out all of this information. My remediation technique for these particular areas is something I'm going to have to do a little bit of work on. I can give you the theoretical part of it. I know it'll function because I've done smaller bits of it and it's in use in other parts of the planet in various different forms. And I will be writing it all up and detailing it later on is the problem. Not at the moment. But if you get to your property ahead of me getting to mine and getting this word out, I'll let you know how to deal with it. And then at some point I'll have it all in a nice little CD for you with supporting documentation and all of this kind of stuff. So you'll be able to just present it to your county and you're done. Assuming counties are a problem in terms of government. Okay, so I'm going to wrap up here pretty quick because I've got to get some food. And it's early in the morning, and we need another cup of tea, and the puppies here are saying, chow, chow. I'm going to start nibbling on your toes. Anyway, so something to note, by the way, people say, I get this all the time in emails. It's not criticism. It's just a curiosity. They say, one quick question, and it's true. It's just, they've got one short question. Some of these questions, you know, six words and a question mark. Problem is, there's no such thing as a quick answer. So just bear that in mind and give me a little bit of slack here. And in terms of the responses, we're kind of buried under the emails. So if you don't hear back from me, I've still got about 500 emails to work through that I haven't even processed because of all the problems and spending all the time in the hospital and crap. So if you don't hear back from me in a couple of weeks, you may want to resend it to me if it was important, because I may have just slipped through with all of the other chaos going around. Thanks, guys. I think that'll do it for today. Stick around. Come back and check this space for our Thanksgiving, post-Thanksgiving Wujo on this really cool subject. And in the meantime, watch out for the earthquakes and the banksters. Stay warm.